Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and you are tuned in to KTOO News in Juneau here on Wednesday, the 25th of July, the year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk with Byron McGilvery, Scarlett Adam, and Alan Davis about the upcoming GLO Broadway Splash workshop and performance. Find out about Thursday night's Old Hollywood Gala at the Rendezvous. Max Karras will be here to talk about recording frogs and other sounds. We'll also talk to Brian Wallace about the donation of his father's drawings to the Sea Alaska Heritage Foundation. That Writer's Almanac Music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with low temperatures around 51 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, decreasing clouds with high temperatures 60 to 75 degrees. Thursday night, partly cloudy skies, and Friday, increasing clouds with a slight chance of rain.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The New Mexico Senior Olympics kicks off today in Las Cruces. Native American seniors are among those competing. Frances Chirino from Isleta Pueblo qualified for the event. She took first place in her age group for the 400-meter walk at the Native American Games and has been training for this week's event.
But it's really interesting how all these events have really helped me to do the exercises that I need to do because I have some health problems that I'm dealing with. One of them being diabetes, and I'm not afraid to tell people that I'm diabetic. And I use my qualifying events to help me do the exercises that I need to do and to keep active, to keep my body alert and keep my mind alert, too.
Chirino says she also likes to dabble in other sports, including shuffleboard. The New Mexico Senior Olympics features more than 100 events in 28 different sports. Seniors age 50 and over from across the state are expected to attend. Winners will qualify for the national championships next year. The film Up Heartbreak Hill premieres Thursday on PBS. The documentary follows some Navajo teens in New Mexico during their last year of high school and explores the decisions and challenges they face as they look to the future. Director and producer Erica Scharf says she hopes the film sparks dialogue among its viewers.
Between kids, you know, on the Navajo Nation and on other reservations, and just to sort of inspire dialogue and have kids talking to each other, but also between people on the reservation and people in other parts of the country who might not know much about what's going on. And so, that's my hope with the film, is that happens.
Thomas Martinez was featured in the film. He says there's a message for kids and their parents.
Telling kids, you know, believe in your dreams, do whatever you got to do to make sure you get where you want to go. Especially for Native American kids, letting them know that college is a possibility, that they can go off and do the things, even though so many people tell them no, their family, you know, aren't supportive or they're not positive. And then also for parents and the older audience, letting them know that when you got to realize how important high school is for kids. Some of them want to go off to college, and how important they play a role in their kids' education is very important.
And he says there's a message for educators as well.
Teachers, especially on the reservation, whether you've come in to teach for a year or two or whether you are a Native American teaching a class, and coaches, even parents, like, this is the broad spectrum of letting people know, like, don't pressure kids into, like, you know, leaving the reservation so fast, because then you're pretty much just forcing them off, like, to go get out, and then kids end up coming back because it was such a hasty decision that they just had to leave.
A public screening is being held tonight in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs is holding a hearing Thursday on Indian gaming. It will examine the current regulatory framework for tribal gaming and discuss any regulatory changes that may be necessary should legalized gaming be expanded by Congress in the future. And now for a correction. On our Tuesday, July 24th history segment, we said the 5th annual VA American Indian Veterans Gourd Dance is coming up Saturday, July 28th, when in fact the event was held on July 21st in New Mexico. On this day in 1971, John Tortez Myers, a Kuya Indian, passed away in San Bernardino, California. Myers was the first Kuya accepted at Dartmouth College in 1909. His athletic abilities caught the attention of Major League Baseball. He became a catcher for the New York Giants and Brooklyn Dodgers. His nickname was Chief and also Iron Man for his strength behind the plate. Myers was considered one of the best catchers in the major leagues. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by the law firm of Sanosky Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:06, and you are tuned in to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our first guests are Dr. Byron McGilvray, Scarlett Adam, and Alan Davis. To talk about the Juneau Lyric Opera's Broadway Splash Workshop and performances coming up in the near future, starting Monday, actually. Scarlett, Byron, and Alan, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Hi, Jeff.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, Alan, a brief overview of the workshop itself. You've been to a couple of them.
Oh, yeah, I've done quite a few. Well, it's a two-week workshop. This usually has a theme or a major work. This time around, we're doing Broadway show tunes, basically. I don't know if we're sticking directly to that, but Broadway, maybe movie themes. I'm not sure what all, but it's we're doing a bunch of choral music, and then there's also a master class of individuals who are rehearsing separately, but they will be part of the concert. We'll be preparing, I don't know how many pieces, but it's just it's a great time. It's a non-audition workshop. That is, you don't have to come in and sing, show that you know how to sing. Anybody can show up. It's just a wonderful time. It's just fun.
Scarlett, what about you? What is the festival magic for you?
Oh, golly. I have been doing this with Byron now for about 16 years, and it's so much fun. We get together every night and work like crazy because he's a slave driver. And
don't believe it.
Blood, sweat, and tears, and at the end we have this wonderful concert that's just always amazing.
And thank you for going down to the station today. What songs are you going to be focusing on?
Well, we are going to be sticking to Broadway, and from some things that we know, like Porgy and Bess. We have a medley from Porgy and Bess. A Man of Constant Sorrow, the piece from O Brother, Where Art Thou? And we're looking at a couple of pieces for ladies. Razzle Dazzle. I want to do a set from Mary Poppins, because I think that's a great musical, and a lot of the music is not done. You know, we can go into supercalifragilisticexpialidocious and have everybody in the audience sing with us. So those are some of the things we're going to do, but it will be strictly Broadway material.
How are you able to welcome people and make them feel comfortable who aren't necessarily used to performing in front of other people?
You know that's true, because you're in my lesson. You felt totally comfortable, and of course, you haven't come out and graced my ensemble yet, but I'm still working on it.
What makes a song timeless?
I think that the first thing it has to... people have to feel that it speaks to them, it says something to them. Second thing I think it has to have is something that's singable. It's been said that great music is that enters the ear with great ease and leaves the memory with great difficulty. And poor music is that enters the ear with great difficulty and leaves the memory with great ease. So I think that those two things has to have a text and a melody, a melodic contour that speaks to the people. The second thing is, I think it has to have a subject matter that is very personal, and that bridges time, a gap in time. We've heard a lot of music over the centuries that was very time specific. Had a composer one time who wrote a piece in memoriam Stephen Biko. Well, most people didn't even know who Stephen Biko was, and so it's difficult for them to relate to that individual. So I think it has a universality. That's the thing that makes it timeless.
Dr. Music, why is singing good for you?
Oh, singers historically live longer. The emotional content and the emotions that they can express, just the breathing, the sheer physiological exertion that goes on, it makes people live longer. And where else can you scream and it not only be acceptable, but it be people applaud you for doing that? And basically, that's what we do. We singing is controlled screaming.
So sometimes there's good screaming and bad screaming, I imagine.
This is very appropriate. So everybody out there who wishes, come out and scream with us.
Talking to Byron McGilvray and Scarlett Anna and Alan Davis about the Broadway Splash Workshop, which is coming up starting Monday. We're going to get to the details about that, but I want to know about the European tour. How's that?
Let the two next to me went with us on the tour, so I'll let them speak to that. I speak to singing in the Vatican and St. Mark's in Venice, but especially for me, I'm going to lay it up front. We're in a little town in Germany called Dinkelsbühl.
Mm-hmm.
We sang for Mass and did a concert after Mass. Little community. I doubt there are more than 2,000 people. Gorgeous old 900-year-old church with a beautiful organ, a packed house, the congregation. People were standing. And so, they have their own memories, but that one, for me, had to be the highlight.
Let's take it from the top. How many people went? Were they all from Alaska? And how many places did you go to?
43 singers. We had 57 people overall.
I think there were 12 from Juneau.
Almost all of our people had Alaska experience, with the exception of maybe half a dozen. Many of them from Alaska, but others who have lived in Alaska and that were somewhere other place, Guy Warren, not very many who did not have any Alaska experience.
How was the experience for you, Alan? Scarlett?
Well, the preparation was exciting because we rehearsed so much to be ready for the concerts, because when we met on May 23rd in Rome, we had just a couple of hours to rehearse, and the next day we were in the Vatican, and it was the most incredible experience, terrifying and beautiful. But I'm with Byron. My favorite was the Dinkelsbühl experience, because it was such a welcoming town, and people were beautiful, the food was amazing, and the church just was so kind and, really
great.
And
it was a wonderful church. It was a genuine Gothic church from, I think, 1540.
Well, shoot, every place we went. Yeah. The churches, not one of them was like the last one we saw, and right. Everything was different, every place was different, but they were all beautiful and just an amazing time, all the way from Rome to Venice to Florence, up into Switzerland and Germany. It was just great.
When we finished at St. Mark's, after the Mass was over, people came to the rail and applauded, and so a young man who works at the cathedral came up and said, I've never seen that before. I said, oh, really? He said, no, never have seen it before. He said, the Pope came a couple of years ago, and during his homily, he said there must be no applause in the church. He said, and this was a spontaneous thing, and he said, I've never seen that before. And that was a very moving thing. But to realize that St. Mark's in Venice, which was the Doge's chapel, is sinking. And they had mats on the floor, but it was very obvious where we were that the pilings are sinking. There's water sometimes that seeps in. And so it's a very precarious situation. Rome, on the other hand, was totally different at the Vatican. What did you think?
Again, it was just an amazing experience to not only just to be there and see the church and the Pietà. You know, the Michelangelo's Pietà is just off in an alcove next to the as part of the church. It's an amazing physical place, but to be there and to be able to sing for a Mass there was just an incredible experience.
It was very moving, moving, and
terrifying.
The cardinal, I guess it was the cardinal who gave the Mass, and
yeah.
Of course it was all in Italian and Latin, and I had no idea what he was saying, but when he said coraggio, I knew what he was talking about. Yeah. And I thought he was talking to me.
But also for them to in English, thank us for being there and announce to the congregation and thank us for being there. But they were really, really good to us. And, you know, it's a big, big government business kind of thing. But they were really good to us and kind and...
Yeah, just everybody we met, I think in the entire trip, was just so kind and helpful. Nobody was felt put out or was irritable. It was just a wonderful experience meeting the people there.
I'm ready to go again.
We're looking at 2014, going to Scotland and then take the ferry up through the Orkney and Shetland Islands in Edbergen, Norway, then concert there, going up the fjord, going up to Sogndal in Norway, and across and down through Sundsvall, Sweden, and Stockholm, and then taking the ferry across to Helsinki and singing the Stone Church in Helsinki. We've got a contact now in St. Petersburg, so go to St. Petersburg, which is only about 6 hours away by ground travel, and then back to Helsinki, and then end up in Copenhagen, do a concert there, and then come home. So that's what we're looking at 2014.
But coming up next Monday, you're going to be doing the start of the Broadway Splash Workshop.
Yes.
Scully, you have details on that, how people can register?
Well, if people haven't registered online yet, they can still go online to JunoOpera.org, or they can just come Monday night. We're starting at 7, but if they come at 6:30 to Northern Light United Church over on 11th Street, they can sign up and join us. It'll be every night, the 30th through the 3rd of August, and then Saturday, August 4th. We'll sing from 10 to 12, rehearse, and then again on Monday, August 6th through August 10th at 7 p.m. to 9:30, we'll be rehearsing, and our concert will be August 11th.
How much does it cost for the workshop?
For the concert, the festival chorus, it's $90, and that's 2 full weeks of rehearsal and practice and voice lessons, so it's a great deal. Music and amazing camaraderie.
And website once again, please?
It starts at 7 p.m. and goes to 9:30 p.m. The 30th through the 3rd, and then again the 6th through the 10th, 7 to 9:30.
And the website people can register?
Is www.junoopera.org.
All right, Baron McGilbury, Alan Davis, and Scarlett Adam, thank you for coming down to the station today. Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
I think that the tickets are...
They're $12 for general. It's $5 for children and $10 for students and seniors for the concert.
And where can they pick those up?
You can get them at the JAC. You can go online to the JAC, their ticket website, or you can get them at Hearthside Books.
All right. Thanks very much for coming by, everybody.
Thank you so much.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 25th of July, 2012. It was on this day, 1897, that Jack London, 21, sailed from San Francisco on his way to the Klondike to search for gold. He was on board the SS Umatilla with his brother-in-law, James Shepherd, who was close to 70. He had mortgaged his house to pay for the passage and gear for the two men. They had an 8-day trip from San Francisco to Juneau, Alaska, and then took boats to the start of the Chilkoot Trail, which was a tough journey, 33 miles through the Chilkoot Pass, the most direct route from the coast of Alaska to the Yukon. When the brother-in-law, James Shepherd, saw the Chilkoot Pass, he realized there was no way he could make it. He gave all of his gear to Jack London, and he went back to California. The Chilkoot Pass was brutal. The trail rose 1,000 feet in a half mile. He had to carry all their gear on their backs. It was too steep for animals. Jack London made it over the pass with a ton of gear, spent a hard winter on Lake Lindeman, came down with scurvy for lack of vegetables, and he headed back. Got back to San Francisco sick and depressed, but he started writing about his trip to the Yukon, wrote a story for the Atlantic Monthly, An Odyssey of the North, which led to his book, The Call of the Wild, which made his career. Here's a poem for today by Mae Sarton, entitled In Texas. In Texas, the lid blew off the sky a long time ago, so there's nothing to keep the wind from blowing, and it blows all the time. Everywhere is far to go, so there's no hurry at all and no reason for going. In Texas, there's so much space, words have a way of getting lost in the silence before they're spoken, so people hang on a long time to what they have to say. And when they say it, the silence is not broken, but it absorbs the words and slowly gives them over to miles of white gold plains and gray green hills, and they are part of that silence that outlives them. Nothing moves fast in Texas except the windmills and the hawk that rises up with a clatter of wings. Nothing more startling here than sudden motion. Everything is so still. But the earth slowly swings in time like a great swelling, never-ending ocean, and the houses that ride the tawny waves get smaller as you get near them, because you see them then under the whole sky, and the whole sky is so much taller with the lid off than a million towers built by men. After a while, you can only see what's at horizon's edge, and you are stretched with looking so far instead of near. So you jump. You were startled by a blown piece of sedge. You feel wide-eyed and ruminative as a ponderous steer. In Texas, you look at America with a patient eye. You want everything to be sure and slow and set in relation to immense skies and earth that never ends. You wonder why people must talk and strain so much about a nation that lives in spaces vaster than a man's dream and can go 500 miles through wilderness, meeting only the hawk and the dead rabbit in the road. What happens must be slow, must go deeper even than hands work or tongues talk, must rise out of the flesh like sweat after a hard day, must come slowly in its own time, in its own way. A poem by Mae Sarton, In Texas, from her collected poems published by W.W. Norton & Company and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Edited by Noah Smith. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:23, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. This Thursday, there's a party going on at the Rendezvous. It's called the Old Hollywood Gala. In the studio to talk with us about it is Tony Walsh. Tony, thank you very much for coming on the station today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So first of all, tell me about the event. What's so Hollywood about it?
Basically, we are encouraging everyone to come dressed up in their best old Hollywood garb. If you want to put a gown on, do your hair, gentlemen wear a nice suit jacket or a nice hat. But we just wanted to create something where people could have an event to dress up for. And also, a good thing about it is we'll have some old music from, I think, the 50s time area, thinking like Rat Pack and things like that. And also, we'll have a live music. Deering and Down has graciously let us have them come and play a show for us. They're going to most likely do about 2 45-minute sets starting at 8.
And this is a fundraiser for the film Pelican 2085. You want to tell me about the film, please?
Yeah, definitely. It's a locally produced film that the director is Patricia Kalbrenner. She has written the screenplay, and it's post-apocalyptic in nature, taking place in Southeast. We're going to be filming in Juneau and also in Pelican. But basically, it's about how two extremely different groups of people have survived post-apocalypse. The electricity is taken out by solar flares, and the town of Pelican has survived through community and being self-sufficient, juxtaposed to the group of ruffians that try to take over their place. And basically, it's just about how community is such an important part of being here in Southeast Alaska.
How many actors are you using?
We have about 30 people or so, all locally cast. We were doing that the last couple of months.
And this is a Kickstarter project, too, isn't it?
Yes, definitely. This is what the event is for. We're trying to raise funds in order to move cast and crew around from Juneau to Pelican, and also to help build some sets that we need to do. We do plan on using the landscape as the majority of the sets, but we do need to build things like a ship console and small closet-like spaces and things like that. So funding will be helpful for that.
What's the timeline for the film?
We plan on being done filming by October 6th. That's our projected wrap party. But with every great project or good endeavor, things often take longer than expected. We plan on having the film done with post-production through next spring. So next year, we'll be having it in festivals throughout the state and also the country, hopefully. That's the goal.
It's good to have a goal.
Definitely.
We'll tell you with Gala this Thursday night at the Rendezvous. What time does it start?
The music will start at 8, but I encourage people to come earlier than that just to kind of hang out, have a drink, and then that way they're there once the show starts at 8.
All right. Anything like that I might have forgotten to ask?
No, just come down, join us. It's pay as you can at the door, but, we are trying to do something really community-oriented here, and funding is definitely helpful. We do have a Kickstarter page, and then if you just search Juno, Pelican 2085, the movie, you can help us in that way as well if you're unable to make the event tomorrow night.
All right, Tony Walsh, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thank you very much for having me.
This was a little bit of music from Deering and Down. Deering and Down will be playing at the Rendezvous this Thursday night as a benefit for the film Pelican 2085. Nothing wrong with your radio. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau, and the sound we're hearing now is the sound of a Pharrell chorus recorded by Mike Sicarius, who's in the studio with me. Mike, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Well, since I work here, it's not a long walk.
So this is going to start off the series called What Did You Do on Your Summer Vacation? So if you did something interesting on your summer vacation, give me a call at 463-6425 after the show, and we'll see if we can schedule you to talk about it on the radio. So, Mike, what did you do on your summer vacation?
I'm not sure I'm quite done with my summer vacation yet, but these frogs you're hearing, and why don't you bring them up a little bit so we can hear them in the background until they fade out. These are from the rainforest down in Washington. It's sort of a hobby project at the moment of recording natural and other sounds. We'll see what happens with them later. But one of the things I found as I was working on these recordings and trying to capture sounds is how much human noises intrude into what you try to hear. You think you hear something, but you realize if you listen closer, there's all kinds of stuff in the background. So there's another recording that Jeff is going to play now with a raven that was recorded out in the Menhol Wetlands on Douglas Island. And the raven was doing some interesting things, and by the time I got the recorder turned on and the mic aimed at it, it was working away, and then slowly in the background, I started to hear something I didn't really want to be recording. You can bring the level up a little bit so the audience can hear a little bit better. Ah, yes, there we go. The low drone of an airplane taking off at the Juneau Airport. And what happens around here in summertime, it's pretty easy to sort of get used to it, is that it really gets noisy. I left the radio station yesterday afternoon and heard a helicopter, a float plane, trucks and buses and cars, and it was really noisy. I know that there's a biologist that had bird surveys down on South Franklin, but there's one location where she just can't hear anything anymore in the summertime because of all the ship noise and tourist noise.
Why does one record frogs?
Why does one record frogs? Well,
and other sounds.
That's a good question. One is to perhaps use them for a commercial purpose, sound effects in movies or radio or theater. One is just the interest of it. Recorded like that recording of frogs. There were probably six or so different frogs in there. I have no idea which ones they are because I'm not a frog expert, but just sort of wondering what's going on. My interest in the natural world has gone back decades and decades. I just am fascinated by what I see and feel and hear and touch as I wander around the natural countryside.
What kind of gear do you use?
Digital recorder. Mine is a small one by Marantz and a variety of microphones, which cost more than the recorder. But you can, you can do this with a variety of things. Partly the major thing is technique and trying to figure out how to record what you want to hear and not all the extra sounds that you don't want.
What kind of things did you, what kind of research did you do?
To have gear, just figuring out sort of my biggest bang for the buck. And then as far as what to record, listen to what's around me where I happen to be. The frogs were a total surprise. We were leaving the parking lot and heard an owl, and then heard the frog chorus, heard an owl, so I recorded that, and then the frogs stopped, and we thought, oh, we've missed them, but they just they returned again. It was kind of a fascinating cycle, like a frog chorus or a frog orchestra.
Do you know what kind of frogs they were?
No idea. There were at least half a dozen. No clue. There's another recording coming up. It's kind of interesting. Early morning, a crow, which did not want to leave, but did not want us around. And my partner in this was probably maybe 6 or 8 feet away from the crow. And the crow was just yelling at her, and she was happily recording everything.
So is part of the process just waiting?
A lot of it takes patience, especially if you're trying to find a time when there's no human sounds. I've heard many times some very interesting eagle sounds or raven sounds, but they've been at times when I've not had a recorder, or by the time I got the recorder ready to record, the birds weren't not making that sound. There's many sounds I'm just going to have to be patient and wait for, and also just get lucky, be in the right place at the right time and record. One thing I sometimes do is just turn the recorder on and leave it on, and maybe something will happen when I have it on. Because if you don't have it on, then it's kind of hard to record anything. So back to the frogs. These were in a pond outside the visitor center at the end of the Ho River Road. And it's a fairly long pond, about 100 yards long. And the frogs, well, basically they're boy frogs looking for a date. And they're just croaking their hearts out. But they were kind of odd. If you notice, when that started, it was quiet. It was just a frog or two. And then more frogs joined in. And finally, everybody seemed to be croaking and croaking and croaking. And sometimes this would go on for many minutes. And then it slowly fade out and drop out, sort of like the end of an orchestral piece, until you had just maybe one or two frogs, and then they'd all go silent for a while, half a minute, or in some cases 5 or 6 minutes, where there were just no frog sounds anywhere on the pond. And then one frog would pop up and start croaking, and then another one, and then more and more and more, all up and down the pond. And this just went on and on for, I mean, we decided to give up after about 25 minutes. But it was just fascinating to listen to. It's not something, frogs are not something you hear up in Juneau, Alaska. I think we've got the only amphibian that's frog-like is a toad, and toads don't make a whole lot of sound.
Do you think they were bothered by the fact that you were there with a microphone?
We thought they were bothered by something, but a car came by at one point that didn't stop them at all. We came and went. We set up the microphone on a tripod and then walked away from it so that our body sounds didn't get picked up by the microphone. But it seemed they seemed to pay no attention to us. They were doing this arrangement of their croaking all on their own.
Do you think they had to sign release forms or anything like that to get you to record them?
We did not ask. We did not know who the leader was.
Maybe they had an agent somewhere in the woods.
Could be. Maybe it was the owl, but the owl wasn't talking to us.
I'm talking to Mike Sakaris about recording frog sounds and other sounds. What's next, Mike?
I don't know. I haven't, since I've been back to work, I haven't had a chance to go out again. I still want to try to find a nice quiet Sunday morning and record raven sounds, because those are fascinating critters. There's one that used to live near our house that sounded like it was saying, uh-oh, in a raven voice. Eagles, likewise. There was a time out on Bayshore where there were like three or four eagles that were just having an argument with each other. And it seemed like one was determined to be the loudest, because oftentimes if you're the loudest, you can win the argument. I didn't have a recorder, so missed out on that one, but it was fascinating to listen to.
Mike, thank you for coming by the station today and sharing your sounds.
You're welcome. This is the Frog Chorus from the Ho River Valley.
Rock went according and he did ride. Frog went according and he did ride. Frog went according and he did ride with a sword and a pistol by his side. He went down to Miss Mousie's door. He went down to Miss Mousie's door. He went down to Miss Mousie's door where he had been many times before. Said Miss Mouse, are you within? He said, Miss Mouse, are you within? He said, Miss Mouse, are you within? Yes, kind sir, I sit and spin. Took Miss Mousie on his knee. He took Miss Mousie on his knee. Took Miss Mousie on his knee. He said, Miss Mouse, will you marry me?
Without my Uncle Rat's consent. Without my Uncle Rat's consent. Without my Uncle Rat's consent, I wouldn't marry the president.
Uncle Rat, he laughed till he shook his side. Uncle Rowdy laughed till he shook his side. Uncle Rowdy laughed till he shook his side to think his knees were both rotten fried. Shelf, you want any more? You can sing it yourself. So that's the end of my story, children. That's the end of my story, children. Oh, that's the end of my story, children. You want any more? You can call Bob Dylan.
Cindy Magnuson, and also Dave Van Ronk here. The time is 3:46, and you are tuned in to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guests are Zach Jones and also Brian Wallace here to talk about Brian's donation of his dad's Amos Wallace's drawings, sketches to the Sea Alaska organization. Brian and Zach, thank you very much for coming on the station today.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you. It is. It's a pleasure.
Brian, first of all, a little bit about your background.
Well, born and raised here. My parents were Amos and Dorothy Wallace. My dad was a very prolific artist, and I kind of followed him in my own fashion by being a photographer. So,
Zach, your background?
I am the curator of collections for the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, and it's really a pleasure to work with that fantastic organization and with such great artistic materials.
Brian, if you could describe your dad and his life in 30 seconds or less.
Yeah, that's quite a challenge.
Take your time.
Well, yeah, my dad was born in Hoonah and moved to Juneau in the late 1920s, and you know, he started learning to carve from my uncle and from Horace Marks. And after World War II, his career started to take off when he moved to Portland, you know, carving totem poles there. And, you know, eventually he was very much in demand of carving totem poles for Smithsonian Institute and the University of Alaska Fairbanks. So his artwork is, you know, from coast to coast.
And preceding all these poles and the carvings were drawings?
Well, what I donated was all of the drawings that, you know, he had in his, wasn't really a portfolio, but it was more of a collection of his drawings from his career, you know, of drawings, renderings of totem poles or of bracelet designs. And then all of the photographs, you know, I got photographs of him carving totem poles in Disneyland. I got photographs of him on The Tonight Show when he was interviewed in New York City in 1958 on the Jack Parr Show. So it's quite an array of photographs, and then shots, photographs of him with Governor Egan at Alaskan Native Brotherhood meetings. You know, it's real hard to pin down exactly what kind of photos I donated because there are so many, quite a variety.
And how many documents and photos did you donate?
I'd say around figure just a little over 1,000.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah.
It's quite a donation. Did you ever think that you want to hold on to it yourself?
Well, my dad died in 2004, and I've, you know, been taking care of the documents and all of his artwork ever since then. But, you know, early this spring, I was looking for something in the basement and opened up a box, and I discovered two photos of my dad that were totally destroyed by water. You know, it was very heartbreaking to see that. It was photographs from his time in Cincinnati when he carved a 15-foot totem pole back there. And those were gone for good, and I did not want that to happen to the rest of the collection, so I immediately started organizing, putting stuff in thriving binders, and then I approached Sea Alaska Heritage Institute to see if they would accept it and be the caretaker of my dad's archives, and they accepted.
Now, tell us why these drawings and other photos are important.
Well, they're important for a number of reasons. Amos Wallace was really just an incredible individual. You could say he was a type of Tlingit ambassador or delegate to not only for within the state, but at times to the lower 48. He traveled around the nation carving, engaging in artistic activities that really taught the nation in some ways about Alaska. His work was represented in the Alaska Statehood Exhibit and was sometimes someone featured around the time of Alaska Statehood in the Lower 48 to help the Lower 48 understand Alaska. And as what we have been given are the incredible, you could say, behind-the-scenes workings of Amos Wallace. Many know about his incredible artworks. They've seen his pieces in museums or even wear them today. But what we have is Amos's personal working papers, the drawings he used to create his pieces, the inspiration. And it's really a magnificent piece that documents the depth and breadth of his life and really the majesty of his artistic skill.
What's the plan to do with him now?
We're very interested in, we have a number of plans. One, we want to make sure the public knows about these, and they can be used for educational purposes. The Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's real mission in some ways is education for the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian, as well as the wider public. We can see these already, the importance of putting these on the web to allow people to study them. We've already had some interest in use in helping aspiring artists learn about Tlingit form line, this sort of complex artistic a vehicle that's found in Tlingit art, as well as other Northwest Coast cultures. So it's a really fantastic model and very applicable collection for instruction. And I think in the future we definitely want to do an exhibit about Amos Wallace and his art, especially in our new building as we work towards it. And I think his art being exhibited there is really just something that's important, that demonstrates the importance of Amos Wallace.
Want to talk a little bit about the new building?
Our Walter Soboloff Center is aimed to, we're hoping to begin construction here in the next few years, and it will be located downtown adjacent to the Sealaska Corporation building in that landscaped lot. And it will give us, it's a larger building that will be just for the Heritage Institute largely, that will allow us to better accomplish our educational activities. And part of that will certainly be exhibition of our art and ethnographic collection. So it's an honor to have collections like Amos Wallace's materials and to display them at our future building.
Brian, do you ever think of taking up carving yourself?
Well, I've been trying to carve several pieces, you know, ever since my dad passed. I had the greatest teacher my first 43 years of my life, and I, you know, didn't take advantage of that. I was more interested in, like, the immediate results of photography. But, you know, seeing his artwork, you know, remembering some of the lessons that he did, I've been using some of his tools to try and, you know, create something, whether or not it's something that people want to have in their collection, who knows, but I'm getting lots of satisfaction out of it.
Talking to Brian Wallace and also Zach Jones, curator of the Sealaska Heritage Institute. Brian, when I saw that article in the paper about your donation, I felt what a generous thing to do.
Well, you know, it was kind of, you know, my mom and my late parents, they're both very giving. You know, anytime a family member needed a helping hand, they're always willing to do that. So, like, following their example, I wanted to share. You know, he had this wealth of knowledge that was just, you know, hidden away in the basement, and I didn't want it to get lost forever. So it's, you know, generations to come will see and be able to learn from the accomplishments of my dad.
Do you have any students that you're aware of?
Do I what?
Did he have any students that you're aware of?
He had lots. Let's see. Yeah, talk to Zach for a sec. I'll think of a few names. But, yeah, he had lots. All growing up, I remember people coming over to, you know, to learn from him. I remember he went out to teach inmates out at Lemon Creek, and he also came to Gaston Elementary School when I was a student there, you know, to teach the kids carving there. But as far as having actual apprentices, if he did, there was before I could remember them.
Well, I think if I could jump in here on that issue of Amos being a teacher, when he was very active in his art, at that time there were not a great deal of individuals, especially Tlingit individuals, doing what he did. There were a number of great artists, but it was not a large number. But Amos was really one that was in that crew that was working to not only, of course, teach the wider public, as we've mentioned, about art and Tlingit culture and Tlingit values, but especially even his own people. I think we certainly want to do more research on his life, and I'd be absolutely surprised if he didn't work with other people. But I can say that already his pieces that have been given to the Heritage Institute are contributing to the lives of students now as they work towards growing in their artistic ability.
You talk about local artists. I remember, you know, Ray Peck coming over quite a bit to learn from Dad. You know, he's a very prolific local artist, and there's just, you know, countless numbers of them that he has helped. Someone, I was riding my bike through town yesterday, and he hollered me down and says, "Hey, that was a great article. You know, I took a class from your dad in 1980. You know, I'm excited to come down to the Heritage Center and see what's there eventually." So,
Zach, how long of a process is it before this year opened to the public?
It's largely open to the public. If people want to come in and take a look, that's always our objective. Education. Although our organization primarily serves the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian people, and that's part of our mission, we want to emphasize that our organization gives to the wider public as well. We're a community, and as we all work together and share together for educational reasons, we find great benefit.
Zach Jones and Brian Wallace, thank you very much for coming down to the station and talking about your donation of your father's drawings and sketches and photographs. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No. I think we covered quite a bit of ground, and like I said, it's an honor to be here, and it's been a great honor to talk about my late father, Amos Wallace.
And I think if I as well just conclude, I think thank you very much for having us on. It's great to speak here about Amos and even Brian. He's an incredibly generous individual. We're all very excited about this opportunity and working with the Amos Wallace materials and just working toward the further engagement of the community through the Sealaska Heritage Institute and with Amos Wallace's materials.
Brian, I know I speak for a great deal of number of people in saying thank you for all your work and your dedication and your donations.
Thank you very much.
Time is 3:58 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also broadcast on these translators. In the Valley and Lock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT Sarasuna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. We're also live online at www.ktuo.org. Coming up tomorrow on a June afternoon, we'll talk with June Deering about the Bike Blender Smoothie Contest. Kimberly Bond will also be here to get with an update on Saturday's Frank Meyer Marathon, and Nancy DeJourney will be giving us a rundown on art happenings in the capital city during Arts Up at Writer's Almanac Music and More tomorrow at 3 on a June afternoon. The forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with low temperatures around 50 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, decreasing clouds with high temperatures around 68 degrees. Friday, increasing clouds with isolated showers and high temperatures around 70 degrees. Coming up next is All Things Considered. If you'd like to be on a June afternoon or know someone that should be, please give me a call. My name is Jeff Brown. Phone number is 463-6425. Thank you for tuning in to KTOO.
Inventories are still low. They're only going to go lower as feed prices rise. So these high prices, this high inflation, it's here to stay.
The Agriculture Department's latest forecast of retail food prices says the drought will make prices go up.
It's Wednesday, July 25th, and this is All Things Considered.